This is Phil Ferrand, and I am driving home. It is episode 73 today. I am starting the air conditioning because it's a little warm today. And something new today. Not very exciting, but I'm actually going to stop by the video store on the way home. Normally, I run to the video store, get another movie if I want to watch something in the evenings while I'm working downstairs, and then I drive back to my major client, and then I drive home from there. But today is different. And that's because my daughter and I have moved our Knit Central sessions to Thursday night. So things are just a little tight these days, because by the time I make it home, it's 6-ish or so, and then I have to grab something to eat, get the podcast loaded, and then turn back around and get back to my daughter's house by 7, and so that we can record Knit Central stuff, and actually that's a little late. So I'm leaving sooner today, about 4:45, and I'm just going to pause this, run into the video store real quick, swap the movie out, run out, which should be interesting because I think I can only keep this on pause for so long, the recorder, or it goes ahead and goes to sleep. So it'll be very exciting. This may end up as a part one and a part two as just opposed to a whole thing, but we're going to give it a try. So anyways, it is episode 73. Things are pottering along at my major client, where I'm doing a business process investigation for them. Lots of meetings. I think I crested 75 meetings this past week, and we've set up over 1,300 outlines for people to fill out. So there's a lot of stuff going on. This next 4 weeks is going to be very, very exciting because now we have to start bringing it all together. And when you're dealing with 75 different authors across 1,300 outlines, as you can imagine, there will be things to bring together. As far as the super secret project goes, I actually had intended to talk about it this week and the kind of various interesting lessons that I have learned as I was doing that. But there's just a few things that need to be resolved on that yet before I start talking about it. And in addition to that, I had been watching all of the previews for Eat, Pray, Love, the new movie featuring Julia Roberts that was written by Elizabeth Gilbert, based on the book written by Elizabeth Gilbert, I think is her name, which at one point I actually did a podcast many, many, many episodes ago on Elizabeth Gilbert and her talk at a TED conference. For those of you who don't know, Elizabeth Gilbert was coming out of a messy divorce in New York, and from the synopsises that I read, she had decided she would take some time off, apparently had the wherewithal to be able to do that, and so she took a year off and spent 4 months in Italy, and then I think 4 months in India, and then 4 months in Bali, I think, and that is where the title Eat, Pray, Love comes from. And it is, has been converted, well, first of all, it was one of those runaway successes. I mean, she had been a writer and had written some other books, and they weren't really that popular. Well, Oprah got a hold of of this one and had her on the show and thought it was great. And I don't know if it was going before it hit Oprah or it just went after Oprah, but once Oprah gets a hold of it and tells her people, you should buy this book, you can pretty much guarantee it's going to sell over 1 million copies. And that will be that. Because when it comes to hard copies, when I was doing books, hard copies garnered a 10%-ish royalty. Well, if the hard copy is selling for $18, $19, or $20, depending on what it is, and you're making a 10% royalty off of that, and you sell 1 million copies, that's pretty much you're done. So And I think it sold over 1 million copies because it was a phenomenal success. It is now being made into a movie, has been made into a movie, starring none other than Julia Roberts. Well, as I began to read through the comments on Eat, Pray, Love as it's ramping up to release, there was one comment that showed up a couple of different times, and I thought, wow, that's pretty interesting. And in fact, there were at least two, if not three, articles that had exactly the same title. Okay, I have made it to the video store. I need to swap out the movie because there are nits on a movie that I already did, and I need to take the movie over to Lizzie so that we can cut them tonight. And I can't remember what the movie was, but I'm hoping to just run in here and find it. See you bye. I'll be right back in a flash. And I'm back. Okay. Let me see if this is actually recording. Yes, it is. Okay, great. I got the movie. Got the movie. Okay, here we go. Anyways, what's been really interesting about Eat, Pray, Love reviews is that there seems to be women commentators who are really honing in on one of those verbs. And I found at least two articles. It's still pretty warm. I'm going to turn up the air conditioning a little bit and talk a little louder. There's at least two articles that are written all around the theme, Eat, Pray, Love, and Eat Some More. And these articles, in essence, are celebrating and fawning over the fact that we have a movie where we have Julia Roberts in it, who of course is thin, and she's just noshing her way and chomping her way through a whole section of the movie and just eating whatever she wants. And it's really interesting to me to see how celebrated this particular component of the movie is. Let me read you a few little quotes and take my life in danger in my hand. She says, let's see. This lush, gorgeous film is based on the best-selling memoirs of author Elizabeth Gilbert, an American who leaves her marriage and her New York lifestyle to embark on a year-long quest through Italy, India, and Bali to find herself via gastronomy, spirituality, and great sex. Okay, she also fell in love. And to be honest, it's about as close to pure food porn as you can get without an R rating. Starring award-winning Julia Roberts, who has now refined the art of eating pizza piping hot, the film takes the viewer on real-life locations that inspired. Apparently, it reshaped her figure, so they talk. Okay. The movie is pure chick flick, and with provocative close-ups and exquisitely detailed shots of gorgeous plates of fresh figs and cantaloupes, fried artichokes, skinny spaghetti, blah, 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 not to mention Napoli's iconic pizza something or other and hot espresso, and let's not forget rich gelato redolent with nuts and candied fruits, and did we mention the wine? That's just one article. And there's another article that goes on to say the marketers apparently knew what they were doing because most of the trailers for this movie feature Julia Roberts feeding herself, licking her lips, enjoying all these decadent things. And the commentators are saying, you know, this really is, in their opinion, the fantasy for women in America, that of guilt-free eating, being able to eat anything you want, anytime you want. And it's the other thing that's interesting to me is it's not just about indulging in food, but both women writers use this term. One calls it food porn, And the other calls it, I'm trying to find, you know, something like food as pornography. But these women write about food like it's the thing in their life. Which just struck me so interesting. Because it was about the same time that I was reading the article about the fact that young girls are entering puberty sooner than they ever have before in America. And the fact that they think the cause can be traced back to being overweight. Because fat tissues store hormones. And what they think is happening is these fat tissues are storing the estrogen that would normally dissipate out the body, and it's tricking the young bodies into thinking that it's time for puberty. And so their bodies then enter puberty. Which brings up, of course, the issues of the fact that there are consequences to being overweight. In one of the interviews that I was doing this last week, it was part of the medical processing personnel. And the client that I work for sends missionaries all over the world. And part of their processing is they do medical processing for these missionaries and get them health checkups and all that kind of stuff and nudge them. And the medical processing supervisor had mentioned that, you know, they look over and see if there are health issues. And one of the things she mentioned is, and if they're overweight, you know, we try to gently nudge them and tell them, you need to do something. I mean, this problem of being overweight in America is so pervasive. And it all really comes down to people being obsessed with food. And it was just fascinating me to read these articles and see how this obsession with food is tied in and made an analogy as if it's an obsession to pornography. Or food in these shots is just like pornography to the viewer. Because there are some people that apparently food for them has that much pull and sway over their lives. And we had talked several episodes ago about food pornography and some of the ridiculous meals that are available at certain restaurants that are hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of calories, that have enough calories in them for 2 days. But really, that was all just kind of a precursor. Because I thought, you know, I can't remember how long it's been in these podcasts since I've talked about fasting. But maybe I should just talk about fasting again. If I ever have. I can't remember. At 73 episodes, it's all starting to blur together because it's been a year, closing in on a year and a half that I've been doing these podcasts. And so I think 78 will be a year and a half. I should probably go back and review, but fasting. Fasting is a good thing. It's amazing how beneficial that fasting is. I've probably mentioned this before, but one of my pastors used to say, there's only really two when yous in Jesus' speech talks. On the Sermon on the Mount, he really has only two things that Jesus is just apparently assuming that we're going to do. He talks about the fact that when you pray, this is how you should pray, and when you fast. Well, and maybe when you give. There is a third one, maybe. Because fasting does something that's really wonderful. It allows you to see that, you know what? For a short amount of time, you really can get by without eating. And I have been practicing fasting for decades now. There was a short time when I got away from it when I was trying to, you know, bulk up and add some muscle and that kind of stuff. But all I did was put on some fat, so I went back to it. And it really is a great point in my week. I fast on Wednesdays. I try to follow Jesus' advice on the Sermon on the Mount when he said, when you fast, take a shower, you know, clean yourself up, don't walk around and tell people that you're fasting, but fast Wednesday is my fast day. I finish eating Tuesday night, and I don't eat again till Thursday morning. I drink a lot of water, and I chew gum, but that's about it. And it's kind of interesting because after you get in the mode of fasting, and if you'd like to start fasting, I would not suggest that the first thing you try to do is go an entire day. I would suggest you kind of ease yourself into it. Like, just pick one day of the week, doesn't matter what day. It's probably easier to do it on a work day than the weekend, or a work day. Yeah, a weekday, unless you work on the weekends. Anyway, it's probably easier to start on a day you're at work, simply because there are enough distractions that'll be better. And you just skip lunch and just start doing that. Just skip lunch. Don't eat any heavier for breakfast or for dinner. Just skip lunch and drink. Drink a lot of water. Whenever you're feeling hungry, just drink some more water. And then, you know, you can start skipping supper. And then you can start skipping breakfast. And one of the interesting things about fasting is that when I get to Wednesday, I'm kind of like, hey, it's fast day. I have more time to do things that I want to do. Because eating takes time. And, you know, when I'm trying to get breakfast together in the morning and I'm trying to get my lunch together and those kind of things, I'll spend 10, 15, 20 minutes doing that by the time I make my oatmeal and by the time I package everything up and then do the physical eating and then wash the dishes out, all those kind of things. And on Wednesdays, I don't have to do that. So I actually gain back a little time. Now, by Wednesday night, you know, I'm starting to lose my energy level and I'm starting to get cold. And, you know, I'm getting tired. Sorry, it's been a long week. But about the time that starts happening, I think, yep, time to go to bed. And so then I just go to bed. And then I get up Thursday, and I'm a little drug out Thursday morning, but that's okay. You know, I just get myself something to eat. And by about Thursday noon, you know, I'm feeling like I'm back to normal, and everything is fine. So, it's not something that, now that I've done it for a while, is really that difficult to do. It's just a matter of a thing that's on my schedule. On Wednesdays, I fast. Period. Besides being something that's not that difficult to do, however, I do gain a great benefit from it. And that is that fasting seems to knock down the level of noise that is caused by my flesh with regards to food. Because really, what's going on, and all these people are like, oh, it was the greatest thing I ever tasted. Well, what's really going on, I like to say, is that food is talking to people. But of course, it's not really food that's talking to people. It's really the flesh going, oh man, oh, if you could just have some of that pizza. That is so good. Oh, it's so good. Okay. Except your flesh knows that if it can get you hooked on that pizza, which it can, if you eat enough of it, you get a chemical response. And you do get addicted to it. It knows that if it can get you addicted to that and you can get you overweight, then that weight will store hormones and will release those stress hormones into your body constantly, not only when you need them, but constantly. And what that does is it just puts your entire mental state under a load. It just puts it all under noise. And your flesh loves to have you in as much noise as possible. I'm getting my mail. One moment. In addition to that, of course, as you gain weight, I've been told that for every pound of weight that you put on, you actually add 4 pounds of stress to your knees. And so your flesh is very much interested in getting you overweight so that you will put more stress on your knees, because it knows eventually you will blow out your knees, and then that will limit your mobility. And it's doing everything it can to limit your mobility and limit your energy in life. And it also knows that if it can get you to put on a lot of weight, you've added to the risk factors for your life in terms of medical issues like cancer, stroke, heart attack, diabetes, yada, 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 yada. And that all starts, I'm backing into my garage, and that all starts with, oh, this is so good, it's so good, it's the greatest thing ever. And that all starts and gets back to what we were talking about several weeks ago, of how the flesh is continually attempting to insert things of this world between you and your relationship to God. So, you know, am I saying it's wrong to have a piece of pizza? You know, I'm not saying it's wrong to have a piece of pizza. I'm saying that there are consequences with overeating. There are consequences with shifting your focus away from listening for the voice of God to listening to your flesh telling you to pursue all the temporal, visceral things of this life. And I'm saying that fasting is really wonderful for knocking down the noise level that the flesh creates with regards to food. So think about it. Try it. You might find it has benefit. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.